The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined by Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor of the Irish Times, and Andrea Gilligan, who is presenter, as you would undoubtedly know, of Lunchtime Live here on News Talk. And I'm very grateful for her to be willing to come into work on a day where she should otherwise be.
Surely there's 3 days off in lieu for this, is what I was told anyway.
Now, before we get to British politics, which are obviously the big story of the weekend, I just wanted to get your do a quick straw poll between you on what you heard there of Joe Biden. This was his make or break moment. Which of those things did it do for him, Mark? Did it keep him on the ticket or not?
Well, I mean, it keeps him on the ticket because he can only take himself off it, given the way in which the structure is there. Has it done enough to deal with the doubts that exist? No, it hasn't. And I'm not sure that there's any interview that he could do that would achieve that at this point. And you have an increasing number of Democrats who are muttering quietly, you know, people like David Axelrod now saying it publicly that he should step down. But you haven't yet got to a point where, you know, there's a cacophony saying this has to end. And until it does, then it isn't going to end.
I'm very intrigued to see how that cacophony develops, because Axelrod was quoted by virtue of the fact that he was covering it on air last night. Yeah. This broadcast at whatever, 9:30 last night. So there hasn't been much chance for media to get their teeth into it. Be very intrigued to see what the Sundays do with
it. Yeah, like it did absolutely nothing to quash any questions about his constant decline, I suppose, is probably the best way to put it. Like, the issue for the Democrats in all of this now, Anton, is the fact that at every press conference that he appears to speak at, and it seems that the Democrats kind of have him in the bunkers at the moment, that they're not letting him talk at every available opportunity where he usually would, that when they do sort of release the shackles off him and let him out, these are the questions, the constant questions. And even Nancy Pelosi earlier this week, like, she has even said, I think it's a legitimate question to say, is this an episode or is this a condition? So even now, like, the foremost names within your own grouping are actually, you know, giving credentials to the media questions of, is he fit?
If you frame an answer in the way that Nancy Pelosi framed that answer, you are saying.
Yeah. What,
you know. And it's total grist to the Trump campaign mill. I mean, it is a gift it's to them to be able
well,
to point to senior Democrats.
And obviously, it heightens the risk factor that it attaches to any public appearance, a stumble, a fall, a misquote. Anything, yeah,
like,
you know,
something as small as Independence Day, 4th of July, Joe Biden came out and then he just started with ho, 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 happy Independence Day. Now, that could be just something as, you know, simple, you might, you know, like if Simon Harris did that or Michael D. Higgins did that, we'd raise no questions. But because of the constant questioning about Joe Biden, his condition, his health, his ability at the moment, now he's confused, he thinks it's Christmas. This is the commentary in the
But it's a difficult
today.
One. I mean, Larry Donnelly made the point that Kamala Harris, even if she is the possibly cognitively more able to go through a campaign, she is less popular in electoral terms, according to all the polling.
She is, and wouldn't win it. The only one who seems to have a chance is the Michigan governor, Gretchen Whitmer. I know Larry Donnelly is a considerable fan. She definitely has a street cred about her, but you're bringing somebody onto a campaign pitch in June. How many Americans know who Gretchen Whitmer is? I don't know.
And what happens with the money? Because all the money that has gone to the Biden-Harris campaign
is in the campaign funds of Biden-Harris. So, you know, whoever has possession has possession, literally. But equally, I mean, look at the video I saw from, I think it was Vegas, a Trump rally in Vegas, and he spoke for 10 or 15 minutes, and none of it made any sense. I mean, forget about whether one agreed or disagreed, but it actually didn't follow together in anything even remotely.
He does have the advantage of that nobody
English
ever
grammar.
Requires him to make any sense, well,
yeah.
Which is helpful.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Let us move to UK politics. There's a lot of coverage about, and we look at the implications for the UK, but there seem to be significant implications for Ireland. I have to say, Andrea, given your home county, it's probably worth pointing out, this is the first British Prime Minister to have sported a Donegal jersey.
Yeah, playing five-a-side during the week. Sure, he has to be great for Ireland, so. He also honeymooned in Donegal, would you believe, Keir Starmer, a number of years back. So, like, it's funny, you know, the... Like, obviously, people today and a lot of the analysis in the papers is around how good is this going to be for Ireland. Like, the overall general sense I've taken, Mark, I don't know about you from the papers, is that it certainly will be a good thing. It'll be a positive thing. It'll be better, certainly, than it was. Obviously, relations had been pretty low post Brexit between Ireland and the UK, nearly as low as kind of the aftermath of Good Friday. So in the first instance, that'll be a relatively easy thing to rectify. I saw photographs of Simon Harrison on a call to the new British Prime Minister last night too.
Last night, after 6 o'clock on a Friday?
I think it was on his Instagram, I think I spotted it yesterday evening. Yeah, I suppose, look, in the first instance, you have that, you know, the day-to-day cooperation will improve and those sort of toxic tensions will have eased. Maybe toxic's too strong a word, but the tensions will certainly have eased. The other big thing, and it was something that Labour had committed to in their election manifesto, and that was repealing the Legacy Act, which was effectively the amnesty for crimes committed during the Troubles. This was so ferociously opposed by all parties, really, or a lot of parties in the North and too in the UK. But the Labour have always said that they will put an end to that. So I suppose in the first instance, the big test for the new British Prime Minister will be to see what he does around that. How soon he can move, if anything, on
now,
that.
Now, this is squarely in your wheelhouse, Mark. Given that you are Ireland and Britain editor of the Irish Times, there are few things more central to you than the relationship between Ireland and Britain. So give us the take.
Yeah, well, the legacy one is interesting because it's the pledge was to repeal and replace. But the ICRIR, the investigation body headed by Dermot Morgan, Declan Morgan, the former Lord Chief Justice, exists. It has been established in law. So there isn't a plan, as I understand it, to go in and unestablish it. So it's going to be there. It's already recruiting people. It's going to be doing its work. What they're saying is that they will go back to the Stormont House Agreement in 2014, and that pledged to reach an agreement between Dublin, London and the Northern Ireland parties about how to deal with the past. Now, you start working on that today and see how quickly you'll get anywhere. So that's going to take a considerable period of time, if at all, whereby they can actually come up with an agreement that everybody signs up to. You know, the Tories sold this as keeping ageing paras out of courts. You know, it was never about that. You know, it was about hiding the actions of the British security services at a dark time in the 1970s and the 1980s particularly. And they didn't want to see that in the public arena. And it suited them from a conservative point of view to flog it as being an effort to protect elderly soldiers and stuff. So we'll see. I mean, Hilary Benn is an adult and a very impressive politician.
If it's a call for you to take it, don't stand in your way.
I grovel in apology.
I like that it's an alarm. Was it to remind you to be here?
I hadn't realised I was going to do that. Sorry.
You said Hilary Benn.
Yeah, he's an adult. He's put in a lot of graft in it. He has the potential to be as good as Julian Smith, who was, you know, probably.
And what of relations in general? Because we did reach something of a nadir when you had the early stages of the Johnson administration, when it was heavily Brexiteer. There was a tension between, now part of it was the Brexit negotiations and us being at the pointy end of it, but there was a tension and a mistrust there that, as Andrea points out, we haven't seen in years. Are we back to a happier place with Keir Starmer?
Well, we're back to a happier place, but always remember that you're dealing with politicians and everything will be about national interest, and you would expect both sides to defend their own camp. But the ties between the Irish government and Irish diplomats with the Labour Party going back decades have been vastly superior. There are lots of family connections, grandmothers, granddads, all that kind of stuff. You know, do you come on holidays to Donegal? You know, there's ways of breaking ice that you're certainly not going to do with somebody with a blue badge on them coming from the Shires, you know. So there's no doubt there's all of that. There are people like Morgan McSweeney, who was very close to Starmer, has been very close, director of elections, campaign director. Is he going to be in number 10 or is he going to be in charge of the Labour Party proper? There's some doubt about that, as I understand it. So there's all those kind of links. Sue Gray, for instance, is his
chief of staff.
Chief of staff. Now, I mean, she's an interesting woman. I mean, besides being, you know, really senior civil servant, she took a career break in the 1980s to run a pub in County Down, where, it, as I understand it, some of the locals thought she was a spy. Which she used to apparently take great crack out of knocking that particular rumour over the bar counter when people asked for a pint of ale, you know. So, I mean, she's got a sense of humour as well, and she's as tough as nails. And she ended up as head of the Department of Finance in Belfast. She then applied for the head of the Northern Ireland Civil Service job, didn't get that, went back to a senior cabinet office posting, and then left to become chief of staff to Starmer a year later. So all of those kind of ties are around. But there's a couple of questions over what it is that they want to do. He doesn't want to reopen the Brexit debate. He does want to improve relations with Brussels. So there are ways in which they can do that, particularly when it comes to the phytosanitary agreement, which sounds deadly dull, but it's everything to do with food and food imports. And that has the potential to get rid of an awful lot of the irritants that exist on GB Northern Ireland trade.
Well, that's a thing, Andrea, I wanted your view on. It was one of the things that I thought was notable about this election campaign, which is that every other country, when looking at Britain, I think still thinks Brexit as a prime issue. We look at the analysis of the impact it has had on them economically. We look at the change in mood towards it that has happened in the years since. It didn't feature at all in any significant way in this election campaign and is completely off everybody's table in the UK.
Completely, seems, absolutely. And it's all like, even I was talking to friends of mine that live in the UK in recent weeks, and the only thing they're concerned about is just it's cost of living and inflation. That's it. That's all. It's the same things that we care about in Ireland. Like, if you're in your 30s, you want to be able to buy a house. You're concerned about mortgage interest rates. Like, these are the kind of things that were very much, I think, top of the agenda for the younger age group, a lot of which would have been likely to vote Labour over the past 2 days. The other big thing, just Anton, too, to note in a lot of the papers when we talk about how what the new government will mean from an Irish perspective and the Irish view, and a lot of that today it's been talked about, aside from the cooperation and the better relations, but also the cooperation with the UK on the issue of migration. And that is a huge thing that is appearing across a lot of the papers too, like the fact that Labour is likely, if possible, to ditch the controversial migration deportation scheme, the Rwanda policy. The kind of feel, a lot of the analysis this morning, it sort of felt that this might actually calm the numbers now coming from the UK directly to Ireland as well. So, like, that...
Also, some of the sabre rattling hopefully will end, because that was another one that got fairly...
Well, it didn't improve relations with here, sort of inviting us to join the policy at one point too. So, like, you've got all of that. You've got this, the connections, as Mark pointed out, sort of the fact that Keir Starmer is flanked by two very senior Irish personnel. I think he's described in some of the papers today as being a Fine Gael stock is sort
Keir
of the...
Keir Starmer has?
Yeah,
is...
in some of the headlines that I've noticed this morning. But look, I think there's it can't be any worse than it was, is probably the best way to summarise it.
The problem with the UK, which no politician wants to admit, is Brexit had a catastrophic effect on their economy. Starmer is afraid to say that because the English hate to admit they got it wrong. Yeah. Without Europe, the UK are banjaxed. 53106 if you view, and I should say, a lot on Trump. Why is Trump not being torn apart for his lies on that night? Biden should go in a dignified manner as soon as possible. I am a US expat and Democrat. Please stop listening to the pundits, politicians and polls. Biden has done great. Stay the course. Never has been a dynamic speaker, just a doer. If the Dems dump him, I will not vote.
That's not an unfair point, because he has done a lot during his presidency. He has got some really significant legislative achievements, and he is somebody who's always worked in the engine room in the Senate during a very long
career. Unfortunately,
a lot
of the people who are questioning him agree with that sentiment. He has done a great job, now stop, is what Nancy Pelosi's et al.
Is it not an issue really, though, for the Democratic Party and those who are in charge of whatever election policy, like, that they've let it run this long? It's really an issue for the party themselves. Yeah.
This isn't
like
an issue today.
This
was an issue last year. Yeah.
Well, I wonder, and I wonder based on no data, but I wonder if you're the Democratic Party and you're saying, OK, Joe Biden is weakening slightly, but he is, according to the polls, he is the man who can beat Trump into 2024. Mm. Once we get across that threshold,
then we can
say,
it's
Joe, you don't need to serve the entire term. You can go with dignity. You can retire, whatever, because we will have secured the election. Maybe they just made a bet that they'd get past November.
Yeah, but
it's the problem with the last with the bet, isn't it?
And the point that your texter was making there about the obsession with polls is a fair one. But all of the really detailed work that was done by The Economist recently, and they did a kind of magisterial piece of work on research across the state, show that there's now 15 or 16 states in play in ways that where it was, you know, previously five or six. And if that is the case, and if that were to stay the same, then there is no way in which he could win.
While we're talking the UK election, I want your view as well on the impact that it has had on Northern Ireland. Because Joe Brawley, who obviously has, I was going to say a dog in the fight, he has an entire pack of dogs in the fight. But Joe Brawley tweeted a picture of the Northern Ireland constituency makeup from, I think, about 1995, which, of course, was wildly heavily DUP. And when you compare it now to the SDLP representation combined with the Alliance, combined with Sinn Féin, it is a completely different picture than we've seen. First of all, Andrea, your reaction to that. And secondly, your reaction to there not being a Paisley in North Antrim. First time in half a century.
Yeah, like Sinn Féin, you know, made history yet again, being returned the largest party to the north. Like it's a much, I suppose, sweeter election result or victory for them post what we were talking about here 3-4 weekends ago in the south. So I know that's something that Mary Lou McDonald and Michelle O'Neill are talking about in a lot of the papers today and in their post-election conferences yesterday afternoon, you know, how it's time for change and all of the usual kind of sentiment that you tend to hear post-election. It's a fairly seismic shock though for the DUP. Like it's, as you said, 50 years since Paisley hasn't sat in the seat in North Antrim. I thought it was sort of funny yesterday, you know, Ian Paisley Jr. was walking out of the County Centre in Maharafelt, and he was asked by some of the media on his way out the door, you know, like, have you anything to say to your constituents? Like, obviously, it's a huge day with the Paisley name gone. And he somehow bizarrely kind of blew a kiss over his shoulder at reporters and and walked on, which I thought was a fairly bizarre performance to give. But it would certainly appear that the DUP, or particularly those in the Paisley camp, they were 99.95% certain that he was going to take the seat. So this has come as an absolutely
And then there's Lagan Valley as well, the old Geoffrey Donaldson seat gone.
Well, I mean, Lagan Valley is more explainable simply because of the fact that it was Geoffrey's seat, and the fact that Donaldson was in court the day before, so lots of kind of memories. So that's slightly more explainable. The result for Paisley is clearly a major surprise, including to the man who won it, because Jim Allister had intended going on holidays next week.
Which may have been Ian Paisley's mistake, if we think back.
Exactly. But I mean, in a bizarre way, it is important to remember that the result for the DUP could have been an awful lot worse. Because if Gavin Robinson had failed in East Belfast and had been beaten by Naomi Long, the DUP would now be in the early stages of another leadership battle. So at least they've been spared that, unless they want to deliberately pull the scab off it, but they're not forced into that.
Although the picture for unionism is not rosy. We have a very fragmented and much less...
Yeah, there's a lot of different strands. And look, obviously, that's always been the case, but it's even kind of more fragmented, I think, in recent years. And I think this sort of shock for the DUP will, you know, that
it's the same
that's prolonged
mistake being made ever again and again and again. You give unionists a choice between running to the centre or running to the right. They will always run to the right and they will always marginalise themselves. And they've done it at all points during this thing. They tied themselves to the Tories. They believed pledges that were made, which were made in bad faith and were duly resiled on by people like Johnson. And then they're surprised by it. You know, this stuff is going to, has always happened and will continue to happen.
We're going to be analysing the impact of the UK election on the UK after 10 o'clock, because we're going to be joined by Andrew Pearce of Good Morning Britain, journalist and broadcaster and political commentator. There's a weird piece of news today, Andrea, that you might be able to take us through, which is that Ireland is now becoming a base for whaling opposition in Iceland.
This isn't the Irish Independent today. Caroline O'Doherty's writing about it. It's Captain Paul Watson. The Captain Paul Watson Foundation has docked its ship at Sir John Rogerson's Quay in the city. This is in response to Iceland's fairly controversial decision to grant a fresh licence to that country's last whaler.
So now, are you familiar with Paul Watson? Do you remember the reality show?
No.
Oh, Paul Watson was an early member, founder, depending on how you slice it, it's like Elon Musk with Tesla, of Greenpeace, fell out with Greenpeace, started the Sea Shepherd organisation and spent ages in the Southern Oceans trying to stop the Japanese research vessels from whaling. This was a big show on Discovery. It was like Deadliest Catch, went on for an awful long time, made him very famous, and I assume got a pile of money into his operation. He's now fallen out, I think, with the Sea Shepherd and is on his Todd in Dublin.
This is sort of a bizarre thing because the foundation says that their crew are going to be able to sail to Icelandic waters super quick, right? Really quickly from Dublin if they get any word that killing, whale killing is about to begin.
And what they're trying to prevent is the Icelandic approach to whaling is pretty brutal. This is pilot whales killed en masse, effectively for sport.
Yeah,
it's not a pretty picture.
No, it's not. And I imagine, too, that some in the lobby groups will have something to say, perhaps maybe about the fact that the Liffey has become the launch pad for this charity taking on Iceland's last whaler. But it's a sort of a bizarre story inside the Endo today. Yeah,
not one I know a great deal about. When I saw the photograph this morning, I thought he was applying for the fish fingers ad because with a beard like that.
He could
that,
be applying for a job in IALPA, given what we saw.
Well, indeed.
He does have the absolutely central casting look of Captain with the white beard and white hair, doesn't he? Did you know that, by the way, while we're on that topic, you know Birdseye Fish Fingers? Do you know that his name was actually Birdseye? He was Clarence Birdseye.
That's
I was
certain.
Amazed by that. Yeah, I always assumed that was a created. Somebody sat around and brainstormed a good moniker.
That's
for
the kind of question that'll come up in a pub quiz nice Sunday.
And Tom's fun fact for the day.
Guys, thank you very much. That is Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor of the Irish Times. Andrea Gilligan, who, if she doesn't get the day off in lieu that she's hoping for, will be on Lunchtime Live on Monday.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.